We are embarking on a brand new journey for the next 3 weeks. We just got done with 7 weeks looking at the book of Acts. And now we're going to turn a little bit of a corner. We're going to talk about something from kind of the other side of the scriptural story. How many of you have ever been someone who had to be the bearer of bad news? Call up your spouse or your parent maybe one day. I just want you to know, first of all, I'm okay. Because you know what's coming is you're trying to butter them up for what you're about to share is not going to be received very well. But I crashed the car, we have moments where it's not fun to know that it is your responsibility to share something that someone else might not want to hear. We are going to be looking for a season at the life of the prophet Jeremiah. If you're not familiar with Jeremiah, we can just ask before we get going and why this is relevant to our world today. Who was Jeremiah?
Jeremiah was a bullfrog. Was a good friend of mine.
No, that's not who Jeremiah was. Jeremiah was a bullfrog in a song a long time ago, but we are talking about the prophet Jeremiah that is known by so many people and scholars as the weeping prophet. Jeremiah had an enormous influence on the scriptural narrative and the story. In fact, his personality comes through more than any other prophetic book that we have. We know more about the person of Jeremiah than we know about any of the other prophets that we have who have prophetic books attributed to them. And actually what we find out is that the life of Jeremiah actually in many ways becomes more significant than even the message. Jeremiah has been depicted. This is the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. This is a Michelangelo depiction of Jeremiah as an old man. Jeremiah prophesied for 5 different kings over his people throughout their reign, 40 plus years. Jeremiah was someone who was given a difficult task, and nobody wanted to hear what he was going to say. Interestingly, he lived in the mid-1600s. He lived in southern Palestine. He was the prophet who was, as we'll look at in a minute, he was entrusted with giving God's word to his people through the fall of Jerusalem in 587 to the Babylonians. And so this was a big deal to be able to be given a message where at this point in life, when Jeremiah is born or when Jeremiah is a teenager, something like this, they've just been through a 50-year reign of a king who didn't acknowledge God at all, okay? And so what ended up happening is the book of the law had been lost completely, and the faith that had been part of their historic story had been completely left behind. The temples had become full of idols of other nations and other religious backgrounds. And there were, when I say ugly things, I mean really, really ugly things that were happening. Jeremiah grew up in a time where his people, did not know God. He also grew up during the same time as the stories of Daniel, which was after the Babylonian invasion. Habakkuk, Ezekiel, they all were in this kind of same time frame. I am not an Old Testament scholar. I focus most of my studies on the New Testament. But it's important that we know at least a little bit of background, even though we're not going to tell the whole story of Jeremiah. Jeremiah is an incredibly long book, but the interesting thing is it's not chronological. Most books that we have go from the beginning to the end, and they follow a timeline. And that's not how Jeremiah's book starts. Sorry, I have a cold, so you might hear me squeaking here and there. So it's very difficult to organize and just tell a story. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a few weeks and we're going to look at snippets of who Jeremiah is. Like I said, Jeremiah is often called the weeping prophet, but that's not really the best descriptor of him. He's called the weeping prophet because he told God's people to turn back over and over again and they didn't listen and it broke his heart. And it led him to times of serious depression and all sorts of stuff. But what Jeremiah really was he was really a courageous prophet. He was someone who was given a task that was not fun to be able to receive, and a message that was not fun to be able to give, and a calling that was quite difficult. And he was faithful with it, and it took a massive amount of courage. So much so that even Jeremiah is listed in Matthew 16 as one of the potential names for who Jesus was. So when they're having a discussion about Jesus, the leaders, and saying, who is this man? Some say John the Baptist had come back. John the Baptist was considered the greatest prophet. Others say Elijah, and still others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. So he makes a pretty decent roll call here, yeah? John the Baptist, Elijah, Jeremiah. So something about Jeremiah and his character must have been evident in the life of Jesus. So therefore, Jeremiah becomes incredibly relevant to us because Jesus is the center of our faith and the center of our lives. And so if we see something reflected here, then let's dive in and let's find out something. Jeremiah is about empires coming and going, but God remaining. Jeremiah is about the world around him swirling and swirling, but God being constant. The Babylonian invasion that toppled Jerusalem is this ever-looming force. The Assyrians had been gaining power, and up to the north, everybody knew that there was a military powerhouse up to the north of Jerusalem at this time, okay? And so everybody knew that there would be threats. But what we're going to talk about is how Jeremiah was able to be faithful in declaring how God's people had fallen from the truth, how their abuses of power and their misuse of religion were a part of that. He challenged the ways of kings, religious leaders, and commoners alike. It took courage. Here's Rembrandt's depiction of Jeremiah. Nobody depicts Jeremiah young, because you can't put that kind of emotion into a young person. Not quite. And so what we see is we see this man who has been beaten up. And yet, there is some real hope in this story. It's hard to be courageous in life. Life is difficult. It takes a toll. Faith is difficult. It can leave us crying out. Evil is difficult, and it can leave us shaking and wondering how to confront it. Jeremiah gives a human look, an emotional look at all of that, but a courageous one. So today we're going to take a few minutes to reflect on God calling us, like Jeremiah, to a risky life and how it went for him. But his story is the story that we can find ourselves in, the joy, the hope, the struggle. Each calling is unique, and let's be very careful about that. Every time that God stirs us, and Jeremiah's calling to be a prophet can mirror God's calling of each of us to follow him into the way of Jesus, okay? So there's a lot of parallels that we're going to pull out here. So we lean into his story with an ear to Jesus for us as we get going. All right, let's get into the story. In chapter 1, we're just going to look at the first chapter here. We begin in the story where the words of Jeremiah, son of Hilkiah, one of the priests at Anathoth in the territory of Benjamin, came. Okay, the word Jeremiah is really interesting. Most names have a really clear description, and names are incredibly important in the Bible. Jeremiah either means God hurls or God exalts. It can mean both, and it's not clear which one it is. And we find out there's a reason that it's probably not clear, is that there were times in Jeremiah's life where God protected, cared for him, exalted him, gave him a voice to the people, and there were times where God hurled him at others. And so we have this balance of even the foreboding of Jeremiah, the third word of the chapter. And we get the name that means God hurls or God exalts. And so the first few verses just talk about how he was a prophet during the reign of various kings. And then we get to verse 4. Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 4. Before the word of the Lord, came to me, saying, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were set apart, before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. This is the first words that come to Jeremiah. The first thing that comes. The first moment that we have is a word from God, not from Jeremiah, and it's a word of knowing. Before Jeremiah knew God, the storyline goes that God knew Jeremiah. Long before Jeremiah starts to question God, God, we find, has been questioning him. What ways will I make him to shine, to bring forth the good light? How will I wire him to make a difference in this world? Is it possible that God has been questioning you long before you have been questioning God? Maybe before you made the decision of if you thought God was important, God had already made the decision that he thought you were important. How might that change the way that we approach God? That word appointed is the the Hebrew word Nathan or Natan, and it means to give. So literally, this phrase is, I gave you as a prophet to the nations. I'm giving you away. The story of God calling people is always about giving. Always. God gives. God is generous at his core. And his purposes for us and his hopes and dreams for us always involve giving in some way. We are intended to be given to the world. We are intended to be a part of God's generosity to the world. In many ways, we see this over and over again, not just in the book of Jeremiah, but we see it in, for God so loved the world, Jesus proclaims in John 3, that he gave his only son. In the beginning of the narrative with Abraham and Abram's calling, God says, I'm going to bless you in order to be a blessing to many nations. I'm going to give you to other people. We are intended to be a part of God's generosity toward the world around us. It's fascinating, it's exciting, it's challenging. So how will Jeremiah respond to this call to be a part of God's generous gift to the nations? I will give you away. Jeremiah says, wait, I'm too young. I don't know how to speak. Hold on. This is really, really important because do you remember that when I talked about being the bearer of challenging news at the beginning, do you remember the example that I gave about how you call and the first thing that you want to make clear is it's okay. Here's the challenging news, but there's good news first. And the really good news, honestly, is that I'm okay. The first thing that Jeremiah hears, the first thing is I know you. So you can almost imagine when Jeremiah says, I don't know how to speak, I'm too young, God says, well, hold on, I thought that we just took care of this. You see, there was an order to this whole calling thing, and the first thing I said was, I know you. The first thing that is spoken is, I understand what I'm getting into. I know you inside and out. I know you better, Jeremiah, than anybody else. And so when I'm calling you, it is not devoid of knowing you. When I'm inviting you into something, it is particularly because I believe that you have what it takes, and I'm buying the whole package here. I'm not just saying I want to use you, but only part of you. I am aware of your insecurities. I am aware of your struggles. I am aware of all of the roadblocks that you will put in the way. And I'm saying, I know it all. I know you. So therefore, it changes how we understand our response. God knows Jeremiah. God begins the dialogue with a statement of affirmation, saying, before we get going, let me make this clear. And then Jeremiah goes back and says, but I'm too young. By the way, the actual phrasing in this is, I'm only a child or I'm just a boy. That's not probably what we might think. He wasn't like six or something like that. Guesses are anywhere between 14 and 21. Jeremiah has a speaking style that tends to put himself down. So it's not hard to imagine that Jeremiah was a young 20-something, but when he's given a deep responsibility, he kind of downplays himself, but I'm only a kid, I don't have any experience, sort of a thing. And so regardless of his age, while he might be young, he's certainly not incapable. Certainly still didn't need parents to cook him his meals. He was quite able to respond to the calling of God in this situation, but all of his insecurities come out. I don't know how to speak. You're calling me to speak. Oh, by the way, also I'm young. And you can imagine that if God doesn't cut him off, then he'll probably keep adding to that list. Because that's what happens, right? What is this mirror? Anybody recognize? I don't know how to speak. I'm too young. Anybody recognize that phrasing? Yeah. So in Moses, in the book of Exodus, when God decides, hey, Moses, I'm calling you to be a representative for me to free my people from slavery, Moses just comes up with excuse after excuse. Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? I've never been eloquent, ever. Pardon your servant. Finally, he just says, please just send someone else. He's like, I'm out of excuses. Let's just be honest. I don't think I can do this. Can you just call somebody else? And the response of God earlier in the story that shaped these people so long ago is the same response. God says, I will be with you and I will use you. God has to begin this calling with a statement of affirmation because we are terrified of this idea of being known. This is why we hide ourselves from each other, isn't it? We do it in relationships all the time. It's why we live in shame. It's why we're not honest with each other. It's why we don't talk about our struggles and our brokenness nearly enough. It's because we are afraid that if we are fully known, we will not be wanted. We're afraid that if we are fully known, we won't be wanted, and we are terrified that if we're fully known, we won't be useful. So we think, if you know all of me, you won't want me. And certainly, if you know all of me, I won't be able to be of use. And so we hide all of us. We hide the humanity within us, the ongoing struggle, which, by the way, is the best way to never be able to grow, is hiding your own struggles. And so we hide these struggles that we go through, hoping that no one will fully know us and find out because they won't want us and we won't be able to be useful. Okay? And then when we do get found out, when we do become fully known, what we often do is then we disqualify ourselves. Well, now that you know me fully, clearly I can't do this. I'm out. Sorry. And so we do this whole world, and the calling of Jeremiah is fascinating because God calls him. He says, I know you fully, and I want you, and I find you useful. Oh, my gosh. That should make our hearts sing if we are people that are really, really messed up. I don't know about you. That's my story. I struggle against my own selfishness all the time. I try not to use this situation as kind of a confessional thing because I'm not sure that's always healthy. But the last couple weeks when my wife has been really, really sick, I've had to deal with all this like self-pity on myself. Here's my wife who's struggling, and here I am saying, oh, woe is me. Oh, I got all these tasks to do around the house and all this kind of rubbish. We often run away from being honest about our struggles. And then when we are honest, we try to say, I'm not useful anymore. We have to learn how to say, yeah, life is hard. Sometimes I struggle. But I believe that God actually wants to use me still. I believe that God has actually called me to do something in the world. And that God knows my struggles. And that God says, yeah, I'll still do that. I'll still work with you. If you ever want to worry about, you know, this issue, just read some stories from the life of David. We're not going to go there today, but that should help because God used David. And if God can use David, God can use any of us because David really screwed his life up in some massive ways. So we become afraid and all these things. And what we find out is that when God shares that he knows Jeremiah fully and that he has called him, what we get is when Jeremiah objects, God doesn't actually deny any of it. He doesn't say, you're not young. He doesn't say, oh, you speak just fine. No. What he says is, don't say I'm too young, in large part because, by the way, self-diminishment does nothing in this way. It accomplishes nothing if you're just gonna kind of do this whole, like, oh, I'm awful at everything, and there's this false humility. And God says, that doesn't accomplish a thing. So don't say, I am young. You do realize I'm talking to you right now, right, Jeremiah? Okay, and you're complaining about why you can't do this. I'm not talking to anybody else right now. I'm talking to you. And so don't say I'm too young. You must go to everyone I send you and say whatever I command you. He knows him. He wants him. He says he can be useful. One of the things that God senses, though, in the next verse is he says, don't say I'm too young. We just said that. But so he notes the explicit excuse that Jeremiah gives. But then he finds the implicit one. So he knows the first excuse. But then later he says, oh, by the way, I'm picking up on all this fear. So I'm going to name that. Since you didn't just say I'm terrified and I'm afraid. You just gave other excuses. So God names the fear. Fear is not always a bad thing. Not at all. Pascal said, fear not, provided you fear. But if you fear not, then fear. Say that again. Fear not, provided that you fear. But if you fear not, then you should be afraid. If you don't think you're afraid of anything, you are in trouble. But if you are normal, if you are human, if you fear, you have nothing to worry about. Now, obviously, fear can be a paralyzing force in our lives. But the point being is that sometimes we should be overwhelmed with the task at hand. Sometimes it should be too much for us to consider, and we don't know what to do with it. You will always be inadequate for the task. Being inadequate is not a disqualifier. In fact, inadequacy is simply the starting point for God to work. See, well, the next thing that happens is that the Lord reached out his hand and touched my mouth and said to me, I have put my words in your mouth. See, today I appoint you over nations and kingdoms to uproot and tear down, to destroy and overthrow, to build and plant. Intense message. It's like gardening. He's looking out and he's saying, your garden is full of weeds. And Jeremiah, you're going to be the gardener. And you're going to have to dig. And you're going to have to uproot some stuff. And they're going to have really deep tap roots. And it's going to be backbreaking work. But then you get to plant. And you're going to see hope and beauty come out of that too. So don't get overwhelmed. But the whole idea of being disqualified or being inadequate is literally the starting point for trusting the Spirit. Paul writes to the church in Corinth, which had, oh, so many problems. And he says, listen. He doesn't say he wants a bunch of perfect people. He actually says, this is the starting point. I know you guys in Corinth, you're super screwed up. In fact, you've been doing some really weird, read 1 Corinthians 5 if you want to find out about some of the weird practices that were going on that were being allowed in the church. He says, take a good look, friends, at who you were, though, when you got called into this life. I don't see many of the brightest and best among you. This is a paraphrase, by the way. Not many influential, not many from high society families. But isn't it obvious that God deliberately chose men and women that the culture overlooks and exploits and abuses, chose the nobodies to expose the hollow pretensions of the somebodies. That makes it quite clear that none of you can get by with blowing your own horn before God. Everything that we have, right thinking and right living, a clean slate and a fresh start, comes from God by way of Christ Jesus. I love it. So the calling requires amazing trust and courage to believe that God can actually use us as not impressive people. But God's pulling Jeremiah out. God's believing in him. God's calling him to a new season. Many of you who are here regularly, you know I love birds. I like watching birds. I like studying birds. I think the journey of responding to God stirring in us to follow him courageously is a lot like a bird stepping out of the nest and learning to fly. It takes a lot of courage. Part of why I like the honesty that God gives Jeremiah in his calling is that we can imagine that when God calls us to follow Christ, it's really nice and easy. When God stirs us towards something, it doesn't require much. It's very gradual. Learning courageously to use our gifts is really all about baby steps like this, right? Like an eagle learning carefully how to fly. Baby steps. So majestic. So calm. Maybe he'll fly tomorrow fully. For today, that's enough. Isn't that inspiring? Isn't that the way it works when God calls us to something? How many of you have ever heard of the barnacle goose? Great. Okay. The barnacle goose looks a little bit like a Canada goose. And the barnacle goose lives on the other side of the world. And they build their nests hundreds of feet up in the cliffs to protect them from predators. So they lay their eggs. And on the first day that their eggs hatch, the parents leave the nest for good. Okay? And so what they have to do is their babies have to get down from the nest. And the only thing that will drive them down is their hunger. So the barnacle goose flies down and calls up to its babies, essentially saying, if you want food, just take that little step. And so it's a little bit different. And I would venture to argue that most courageous steps with Jesus require a bit of faith. And honestly, a bit of pain, maybe a little bit more like this, okay? And it's so good that I'm going to actually let David Attenborough narrate it for you, because everything that David Attenborough narrates is fabulous.
Perfect launch and a controlled drop. This is as good a descent as it's possible to make.
I can't believe we're watching this in church. It just keeps going.
Its parents are there to meet it.
So what is about to happen? We're not sure.
A little dazed, perhaps, but all in one piece.
And he concludes his story.
Without such a dramatic start in life, it's unlikely any of them would have even got this far.
I love how he shakes his head, like, what was that all about? Are you kidding me, Mom? Seriously? This is loving? That was, right. I'm not going to show the rest of the flights, because they're not quite as hopeful, all of them. But it feels like that sometimes, right? Learning to forgive. Loving your enemies. Trying to live the Jesus life, being faithful in the midst of temptation. It's painful to hear and follow the call. It's easy to get beat up. But God has given you what you need to survive. And the message to Jeremiah is, I know you. I am choosing the whole package when I'm inviting you in to follow me. I know all of it. I know you're not perfect. This is the job. This is the crazy calling that God has of desiring to partner with his people. God has chosen to use people to extend his kingdom. As much as we might want to question that wisdom, we don't need to, because God is with us. And he says the same thing to Jeremiah. But that's intense, right? Jesus called his disciples, by the way, in ways that required them to leave all else behind. Their lifestyles, their previous allegiances, their obsession with comfort, their arrogance, to lay down their lives for others, sometimes painfully. They walked away in one moment, following this grace-filled rabbi who somehow conveyed that he knew them, he wanted them, and he believed that they were useful. That's the message to the disciples. We're not teaching on like the first two chapters of Mark today, but boy, do I love that story. Boy, do I love the story of Jesus going and finding disciples who were fishing with their dad on the boats, which meant culturally that they had already been rejected from rabbinical school and judged as not quite up for the task of being able to be a rabbi one day. That's why they leave so quickly. We always wondered, did Jesus like put a magic spell on them? Why'd they just leave their nets behind? Jesus gave them a chance by believing in them when they were told that they weren't good enough. Jesus said, I can work with that. Oh, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. So what do we need to actually do all of this? To not be afraid to take the jump. Because when God calls us into the unknown for the sake of his mission, it's hard to keep the faith sometimes. So what happens next in the story, the final part of the calling, is that Jeremiah is given tools to address this issue in the final portion of his own calling. So So Yahweh puts his hand on Jeremiah's mouth, and he says, I am with you, I am going to work through you. And so, all right, here we go, Jeremiah. And we get a vision that he gives him. So the word of the Lord came to me. What do you see, Jeremiah? I see the branch of an almond tree, I replied. The Lord said to me, you have seen correctly. I am watching to see that my word is fulfilled. Now, that's kind of like an interesting story, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to us. Okay? He sees an almond tree. So the point that you get is, of course, you remember Hebrews were brilliant storytellers. And so this is where the scriptures start to come alive when you dig a little bit. And so what you find, okay, is that this story of the almond branch, okay, the word for almond branch is shakade, the Hebrew word, okay? Shakade. So he says, what do you see, Jeremiah? And Jeremiah says, I see an almond branch. I see a shakade. Now the word for watch is shakad. And so God is giving him a little vision and a holy reminder. And so what do you see? I see a shakade. Ah, yes, I am going to shakad over you. It's like saying in English, Jeremiah, what do you see? And he says, I see a stick. And he says, yes, I'm sticking with you. That's the wordplay going on. But here's what it does. See, the almond tree was fascinating because it bloomed before anything else. It was one of the first blooming trees. And so the flowers would come sometimes when the snows were still around and when everything else was bare. And so they were one of the most noticeable signs of the new spring to come. And so all of a sudden, God has given something where Jeremiah, for the rest of his life, every single time he sees an almond tree. There were olive tree images too that are really good, but we're not going to talk about those today. Every time he sees an almond tree, you know what he thinks? God's going to keep watching over everything that I'm declaring and working with it. It's not just about me. Every single time. And the word watch, it's not some special word. It's just like we were talking about watching something. So every single time in his daily life that he hears the word shakad, he will be reminded of the shakade. Of the almond tree vision. That every single time he hears somebody talking about watching, he says, oh yeah, God's going to watch me. Just like he faithfully showed me that almond tree. And so he's given a vision that is a sustaining thing. Here's the deal. When we are called, we need God's sustaining vision. And we need visions of God's faithful presence so that we can keep hoping. For the rest of his life, there would be images. When Bethany and I were dating, we would go on hikes, and this one time, all right, maybe more than once, but this one time we were hiking, and we got to a bridge, and I gave her a kiss. And so what ended up, we were in the woods, and so what ended up happening was this little habit developed where every time we'd be hiking and we'd get to a little footbridge in the woods, I'd give my fiance and later wife a kiss. And so now when I'm hiking, even when I'm alone, every time that I pass over a bridge when I'm hiking or backpacking, you know what my mind goes to? It goes to my love for Bethany and that story that continues to unfold. We were at a lake one day, and we saw this was 15 years ago, and we saw this thing hopping around right beside us, and as we walked, it was a bird, and as we walked, it stayed on the edge, and we found out later that it was a green heron. We had never seen a green heron before. Now, every time that I see a green heron, I remember new adventures with Bethany. It's those sorts of sustaining visions that we need with God to call us and remind us back. When I was with my mentor before we moved to Delaware, to decide to start a community. I was really struggling with it, but it was clear that this was what my heart was being postured toward and what God was stirring, but I was just lacking courage. And after I had explained all the reasons that I shouldn't, he just looked at me and he said, just say yes. Just say yes. So often I'll hear the phrases about saying yes, and it'll remind me about that moment that I needed just a little push to be a little more courageous from God, for God's calling. We need sustaining visions like this. Oh, by the way, sorry, there's an almond branch. So the next thing that comes after this promise of I am watching to see that my word is fulfilled, I will be with you, is a less exciting image. Okay, so the next image that comes, he gives him two, and the second one is this. The word of the Lord came to me again. What do you see? I see a pot that is boiling, I answered. It's tilting toward us from the north. The Lord said to me, from the north, disaster will be poured out on all who live in the land. I am about to summon all the peoples of the northern kingdoms, declares the Lord. And so what Jeremiah gets, the second image, is an image of a boiling pot being poured over his land. An announcement from God that there is destruction on the way. Now, we need to be careful, by the way, culturally speaking, and in terms of when we talk about judgment and destruction. The image here in the Old Testament, frequently, images that are used of God bringing destruction and doing evil, we need to make sure that we are carefully acknowledging this in light of Jesus, okay? We need to acknowledge that we are seeing a consistent God and that Jesus is the clearest, truest, fullest representation of God that we have, the exact representation of who God is. So often, the way that this would be talked about in terms of completely God's judgment, what we see actually is in the final chapter of Jeremiah, God declares judgment on Babylon, the people who he's talking about here using. Okay, so it's not as if God's taking control of people against their will and saying they're going to punish you and they're not going to be able to control it. The Babylonians were doing unbelievable wickedness and evil. And essentially, God was declaring, listen, I'm trying to walk with you, but when you have turned away so much that you look no different than the rest of the nations around you, you look no different than the rest of the people around you, when that happens, you will go the way that you're going. Those who live by the sword will die by the sword. If you choose to live in this kind of way, then you will end up being treated like every other people group who wars back and forth. And there will be judgment and there will be destruction, and I won't be able to walk with you in the same way. The Spirit of God, the word is wind, and so often my spirit will be with you is like my wind will be at your back. But if you turn around in the other direction, you will find yourself walking against the wind. Let's be clear about what we are talking about here. The temples of God were being used for child sacrifices by the Hebrews. Chapter 19, Jeremiah. Be aware that what we are talking about is a people who had completely forsaken what it meant to follow God. So when we talk about idolatry, this is just an aside for 45 seconds. When we talk about idolatry, we're not talking about like singing a love song like to a piece of wood accidentally instead of to God, okay? What we're talking about is embodying a complete way of life that ignores God's call for justice, for compassion, for caring for the weak and the poor, for walking faithfully, for caring for the youngest and most vulnerable in the community. These things that made God's people set apart, their love for the stranger, their willingness to make the hard decisions, to stay faithful, to resist all sorts of sexual immorality and all sorts of stuff like this, all of these things that made them unique, there was a way of life. So idolatry, when it's spoken about in the Bible, isn't just like, oh, you've got like a, you know, like a wooden totem on your dashboard. It was a whole way of life that was embodied by giving your allegiance to another. So what do we do with this? We need sustaining visions of the world's brokenness, just like we need sustaining visions of God's faithful presence. We need sustaining visions of God's faithful presence so that we can keep hoping. But we need faithful visions of God, of the world's brokenness so that we can keep working. Because it's easy to just want to give up. If we fool ourselves into thinking that everything is okay in the world, or that evil can't touch us, or that nothing is at stake here, we deceive ourselves. The boiling pot serves as a reminder of the evil surrounding us, and it serves as a reminder of the risk within ourselves of straying so far from God's heart that we simply rise and fall with the world around us. That's what would eventually happen to God's people. Their corruption had become so deep that God could no longer truly say that they were his people. So, we need both of these things. We can only remember that God is good and think about the future if we choose not to hide or ignore the realities of evil in our world. We have to walk both. We have to walk in hope and in honesty. Our calling is to walk in hope, fully engaged with the harsh realities of living in a world that needs to see truth. We need those sustaining visions. So I want to encourage you this morning to look for God to give you a sign of hope or of faithfulness. Let's be honest. Most of us have plenty of signs of the world's brokenness around us, don't we? Most of us have plenty of reasons to look around and say, I've got work to do. Jesus, I get it. I get it. There's so much brokenness all around us. We don't want to remove ourselves so far that we actually become a part of that or the cause of it. Ask God for a sign of hope, or maybe even choose from one as you look back at the times that God's already spoken, okay? I have a pastor whose friend, a pastor friend of mine whose church, they pray at 10:02 every day. Their phones give them a buzz, and it reminds them of Luke 10:2, where Jesus says, pray for laborers to be sent out into the harvest because the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. So many people are longing for the kingdom of God. Just pray that God would actually send more people who would be mobilized out. And that's a holy reminder for them of God's faithfulness and hope in a world of brokenness. Those kinds of sustaining visions. This Sunday actually marks, I think, 6 years since we had our first public gathering in a pavilion out in a park in Wilmington, when the first time that the church gathered. So this is 6 years ago today. And in that first year, we had baptisms out in a river, and we celebrated the first people joining in covenant at a place called Rittenhouse Park. And now every time I walk by that park and that spot, I'm reminded of God's faithfulness and the need for loving in the midst of a world of brokenness. We need sustaining visions. So, as you go this morning, as we prepare to move on to our final practice of sharing in communion, I want us to ask ourselves, what is in this for us today? We need to hear the voice of God speaking about knowing. God knows you fully. God still wants you. God finds you immensely useful for his purposes and goodness in the world to extend his kingdom. I love that in Ephesians 2, do I have it? Nope, I don't have it. I'll just read it to you. In Ephesians 2, verse 10, Paul declares that we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works for which God prepared in advance for us to do. We are a part of God's workmanship. Sean, you work with your hands. You form things. That's our role in God's hands, is to be formed, to be immensely useful. Not to be used and abused, but to be used for something that honors the humanity and the spark of the divine that's within us. Believe that God knows you and wants to use you. And maybe ask, okay, what work do you have for me then, Lord? Sometimes we need to look at how we're wired. We need to look at what God's hope is for the world. And we need to throw a listening into the ear, into the spirit. And then we simply move forward with courage. We say, all right, God, how'd you wire me? What is your heart for the world? What's the spirit stirring? Time to go. Time to take a step of courage. Don't be afraid of it. And I will say one last thing, because it's not a part of Jeremiah's calling, but it's a part of the early church's calling. There is a role that the community has to play in all of this. When God stirs us towards something, we really believe that the Spirit works in such a way that God affirms that through other people. And so we use community in deep ways for that purpose, to say, okay, I really feel like God's stirring me in this direction. What do you think? Can you pray with me? Can you encourage me? Do you recognize these gifts within me? Or if you don't, do you recognize that maybe God might be wanting to use that? Do we agree? Is the Spirit bringing some sense of peace in the midst of this? We really value that. The early church, when people were sent out to proclaim the good news, they almost always sent them out in teams and sent them out with prayer and preparation and discernment that God was indeed calling. So we don't just figure all this stuff out on our own. I'm thankful for that. All right. God has chosen you to be a partner in expressing the kingdom of Jesus. Our message may look different from Jeremiah's, but our journey might feel similar. So will you pray with me? Father, thanks for your ongoing love and patience with us and for knowing us, even when that makes us uncomfortable. Thank you for calling us out, even when it seems like it's going to require massive amounts of courage and we might have to put aside our own will for some time. I pray that you would faithfully reveal your hope for us as you faithfully invited Jeremiah into your calling. In the strong name of Jesus, we pray.